This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, and I'm here with Stefan Schultz, and I am really looking forward to talking with you about Yonder, the Cloudcatcher Chronicles, and all the other great music you've done. Stefan, it's great to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Kate. It is lovely to be here and lovely to be speaking with you.
Well, just for openers, you know, I'd love to find out a little bit about how you got into composing for games. You know, you were a French horn player, and you were in the Australian Army Band for 5 years, and I know from experience it's like the toughest instrument there is, because my son actually crushed his. He got so frustrated.
It is a weird one. In that I actually technically started on trumpet when I was at school and got into French horn. And I mean, look, any instrumental player is going to say that their instrument is the hardest to play. The interesting thing about French horn is that people who don't play it also seem to agree that it's pretty hard. So whether it's the hardest or not, I mean, you know, that's a hard thing to quantify. But it is certainly something that I utterly adore. Some of my favorite composers and the people who have influenced me musically have been very good with writing for horns. And so when I had the opportunity to learn it, I leapt on that. And it's also in a lot of the music that I write, I use horns as well. And I guess that's a natural thing. You tend to write what you know better. But one of the things about horns that I love is that you can have a giant horn section, which is a little bit like an artillery section, and they blend beautifully with the rest of the brass. They can stand out by themselves. But equally, horns can sit and in fact do. If you have a wind quintet, you'll have flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and French horn. So it blends very nicely with winds, but also quite often you will have nothing but strings and horns, and that seems to work very well as well. So it's quite interesting in that horns are very, very suited for many different sort of combinations of instruments. And I think that's one of the things that really has always fascinated me. And from a sound point of view, they are just glorious.
Oh, yeah, especially if you've got to write big, heroic stuff. There is just nothing better.
Oh, you should try playing big, heroic stuff. I mean, if you get to play in a giant horn section, whether it's a sort of a classical Mahler type thing or whether you're doing some sort of, because that was one of the things in the army band, we did a lot of sort of, you know, pop concerts type stuff where we'd be playing things like, you know, Star Wars themes and Back to the Future and all of these sorts of things. And it was really funny because when you got to the horn solo bit and all four horns arced up, you couldn't stop us because we were just having too much fun. And it really is. When you give a melody to the horns, there is no doubt that the horns have the melody.
Yeah, that's true. They just shine out. It's kind of like a sunbeam. There's that moment in Sibelius's Night Ride and Sunrise where the sun's coming up and the horns just like, it's like a laser beam coming up.
Thank you.
And in fact, it's interesting you say that, and maybe we should touch on that in Yonder in just a second. But
sure.
One of the things that's interesting is that I've been having orchestration lessons with somebody who I consider a very good friend. He also happens to be an incredible orchestrator. He's orchestrated for many AAA Hollywood films. And we were talking about horn, and what was interesting is that he pointed out something to me that as a player, it had never occurred to me. And he said, do you know what the magic with horns are? And I said, well, no, not really. Well, other than all the things that I did know. He said, because they face backwards, there is a sort of a delay. It's not so much a delay, because horn players are trained to play a little bit in front of everything so that the sound reaches you. But you don't have a direct sound. A trumpet or a trombone is pointing directly at you, and it's kind of like a musical laser. It hits you between the eyes. Horn, the sound of horns, bounces off the back of the studio or the back of the orchestra area or the concert hall or whatever. And so because of that, it has a kind of an otherworldly sort of sensation to it. So quite often, horns have got that almost divine sort of feeling from them, because it's that the sound is bounced all the way around the outside of the theater. And so it sort of almost has that sort of word of God type presence to it. And this is why horns do so well. And I think one of the reasons why I like horns is because in so much of my favorite music, which is often, you know, the superheroes, you know, the music changes and the superhero is about to start kicking butt. It has that essence of it's kind of like, it's almost ethereal, that it's come from somewhere else. And I think that's one of the things that's quite interesting about it, and probably one of the reasons why I love it so much.
Yeah, and that is fascinating, because I had never thought of it that way too, but
yep.
That's absolutely right. The sound gets colored by whatever is around the horn. And you mentioned your music for Yonder, and what really struck me about it is the gorgeous orchestral writing. And so, first of all, Prideful Sloth, the studio that made it, is like a tiny, tiny team, right? Three people.
Right.
So,
yep.
How did you get attached to the game?
I almost turned down the job, which was quite hilarious. I was working, at that stage, I was working full-time for Magic Leap with George Sanger's team. And George Sanger is an amazing, wonderful person in the game industry who's been around for many years. And I was part of his team. And I was also working on a couple of other projects sort of part-time. And somebody contacted us and said, oh, hi, we heard that you'd just finished doing the sound design for another indie game called Armello.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing this indie game, and we'd, you know, would you be interested in work on this? And I was like, oh, I'm really busy, and you know. And they said, well, we'll send you a demo, and the demo was just gorgeous. So the core team of Prideful Sloth is actually they're partners, so Joel and Cheryl, and they basically make up, like they are, you know, they're kind of like Wonder Twins. It's like, you know, the two of them together makes the creative director. Cheryl's the game designer. Joel is an artist/programmer. And they pretty much, with the two of them, created this amazing little demo. And I looked at it, went, okay, this is quite special. Having no combat and no violence in it really appealed to me. But I was still like, oh, I'm really busy and I'm really not sure. And so I was kind of trying to find a way out, which might seem a bit strange. But so in my mind, I sort of thought, look, this is nice, but if I was going to do this project, I'd really like to have a particular style of music that I've always wanted to do. And so I sort of thought, this would be my excuse to get that. But it was also kind of a get out of jail free card. If they turned around and said, oh, no, we don't want that style of music, it would sort of give me that wriggle room to sort of say, oh, all right, well, thanks, but no thanks. Mm. Which is weird, because it still looked like a pretty special project. So I met up with Joel and we talked about everything. It all seemed to be going well. And I said, look, just one last question. I've got a style of music in mind, you know, that I would love to do for this. But, you know, I obviously it depends on what you guys want. What do you have in mind for this world, for this project? What sort of music speaks to you? And he said, well, really, this game is all about adventure and wonder and innocence and excitement. And so we really, really want all the music to have the same sort of qualities and feel as Studio Ghibli Miyazaki. And my response to that was, oh, bugger, because that was exactly what I had in mind. So I was like, all right, there's no possible way I can turn this down. It is already a stunning game that has so many things going for it. And they've just said that the style of music they want is the style of music I've always wanted to write. So it was literally like, you know, destiny or fate or something is clubbing me over the head saying, shut up and take the gig. So I did.
And the music that you've written for it is just so, so beautiful. And it absolutely does fit the style. And What's so really wonderful about this game is all those things that you just mentioned, the innocence and the wonder and the sense of adventure. And how much music did you end up writing for the game? Because, you know, it's almost an infinite game. You can spend as long as you want playing it. But how much music did you end up writing for it?
Firstly, thank you very, very much for your lovely comments. Now, that's interesting. Because of the way I approach games, it's not just writing a piece of music and dropping it in. There was a design process, and this is where I'm going to just refer back to what you mentioned before about sunrises and horns. The game has multiple different states. So it has daytime and nighttime. And we reflect that in the whole thing, in the whole sound design and the music. So there are pieces of music for night and pieces of music for day. But at the transition points, there are actually a selection of pieces that are called dawn and a selection of pieces called dusk. And quite often there may not be a piece of music playing because we don't always have music playing all the time. Sometimes it a piece of music will stop and it will just settle into silence so that you can just enjoy the world a bit rather than feeling like the music is wallpaper. So, but if music is playing, one of these little transitions will gracefully interrupt it and play you. And it literally is, it's a phrase. And at dawn, it is a 4-bar phrase that in every single one of them has horns. And it literally is a key change from the chord progression I use for night that literally changes and gives you that sunrise moment in the horns. And then, after a little bit of silence, one of the daytime pieces will come in and they're all very boppy and happy and adventurous and joy, etc. At the end of the day, we have pieces of music that all kind of settle down and all actually resolve into a particular key. Because even though the daytime pieces are all in different keys, because they're all about, as I said, adventure and discovery and all these interesting things, nighttime, it was very important for me to convey that there is no threat at nighttime. Nighttime is not supposed to be ominous or dangerous. And so every single piece of music I wrote for night is in the same key. And it's in fact the same chord progression. So people are not going to notice that. But what it does do is it gives them a sense of familiarity and comfort so that nighttime becomes a sort of a wholesome, relaxing time to wander around and sort of slow down a little bit without any sense of danger. So we've got all of those pieces of music. We then have some specific ones for like there's a festival that goes on, there's some music for that. Every time you go into a town, there's a piece of music that's actually called The People of Gamea, and it's quite a long piece, but every time you go into a town, it sort of picks up in different spots. And so this is lots of little themes to represent all the people on the island. And then there are little transitions, etc. And when you sort of pat a groffle or whatever, there'll be a little piece of music that'll play when they're happy. So actual musical pieces, there is well and truly over an hour of musical pieces. But then if we put all the little transitions and all the little scripted sequence pieces and stuff, it's quite possibly another half an hour or so. So there's probably 90 minutes all up of music.
That is an aspect of music for games that just fascinates me. All of the thought that goes into the kind of mood that you want the music to create to support the game. And it must have been great to be able to work with the team pretty much right from the beginning to develop, you know, the point of the music and what you wanted it to do in the game.
Yes, and this is one of the things which, thankfully, as an industry, we're slowly getting better at that. A lot of games in the past were literally like, oh, the game's done, can you do some music? And you just sort of, you know, face palm, sort of like, oh, please, why, you know, we should have had this conversation day one. Whereas with Prideful Sloth, we did. And I think the game is much better because of it. The team were incredibly supportive, and the music and sound design, because I did all the audio for the game, and what we could achieve was amazing because we would try things out and we would experiment backwards and forwards. And so it allowed us to be really quite ambitious. And one of the other elements is that every single piece of music actually has multiple layers. So I grew up very much influenced by the Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Looney Tunes cartoons, and they are some of the best underscoring of music ever. You know, Daffy Duck tumbles downstairs, you get blump 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 blump, blump in the music. And so I wanted to bring an element of that, and that's kind of hard in an open world game. So what we've done from an implementation point is when I wrote the music, every single piece of music actually has a whole bunch of layers that are hidden 90% of the time. So for every single piece of music, for every single bar and every single note, there is actually an accompanying harp part that does a descending arpeggio, which is sort of like da 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 da. And so in this game, if your character jumps off a cliff or runs off a mountain, instead of falling and hurting themselves, they pop out a little parasol, kind of Mary Poppins style. And so you float gently to the ground. And so no matter what piece of music is playing, if you do that, there is a layer that immediately ramps up, and in key with the exact piece of music that's playing at the time, you get the little harp that goes ding, 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 and accompanies you down to the ground as you float.
Oh, that's amazing.
The other element is that most of the pieces also have the underlying sort of oompah bit is actually very, very soft. It's not completely gone, but it's very, very soft if you're standing still. Whereas as soon as your character starts to move and run around, it comes up in volume. So you literally get a piece of music playing, but as you start to move, the oompah, oompah, oompah comes in and gives you more sense of movement. And so again, these are quite subtle, and most people won't even notice these. And there's a few other little tricks like that of transitions from, if you go from the forest to the grasslands and the melody's being played in a flute, it might actually transition so that the melody's being played in an oboe on some pieces, to just to sort of accompany and support that shift, that change. So there's all sorts of little, I guess you could call them tricks, that we use to kind of give you that sense of underscoring that you'd get in a film that is much harder to do in a game because a game is interactive.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with an open world game like this, the player could be doing anything. They could be spending, 45 minutes fishing running off and petting those adorable animals or whatever. And so to be able to cover that and have it not be repetitive is obviously a challenge that you figured out a really creative way to fill. So that's fantastic. And then the other thing, the other sort of wrinkle, I guess, is that there are seasons in this world too. So you can visit a pond and fish and in the summertime or spring, and then in the winter you can walk across it because it's frozen. So did you take that into account at all, that the music would change with the seasons?
That's interesting. I did consider that, and I decided not to. Now, there are actually all the pieces within the game do have titles. Like I always give my pieces of music titles because it helps contextualize everything for me. And so there is a piece that's called Winter, but it doesn't actually necessarily play in winter because I decided I didn't want to limit that too much. I didn't want it to be too predictable, but also because, as I said before, I created all of the audio for the world. I created the sound design to work in sympathy to the music. And so what we have is there is actually every single tree in the world actually is packed full of creatures, in that what I have is the tree is the source of where the birds and insect sounds come from, but those birds and insects reflect day and night. So obviously you get crickets sounding at the bottom of the tree during the night and birds in the canopy of the tree during the day. But if you walk between two trees, literally the birds will be in the tree on the left and the tree on the right. And if you walk from the forest out to the grassland, you leave all the birds behind. So it's not a stereo sound file or anything of birds. All the birds actually exist in the world, and as do the crickets. And in fact, if you walk up to the actual base of most trees at night while the crickets are playing, you'll scare them and they'll shut up until you go away.
Wow.
So when you walk away, they come back. But getting back to your question about the seasons, I've actually put in, there's over 40 different species of birds, insects and frogs. And so what I do is I actually have created sort of almost a migration sort of behavior so that the insects and the birds that you hear in the forest during winter will be very different to what you'll hear in summer and spring. So as you move around, you definitely get a sense of day and night. You definitely get a sense of the time of year. There's also a complex weather system as well. And so I didn't feel quite the need to specifically write music for each season, because overall what I've crafted is a sound environment as a whole. And really, in a lot of ways, especially with something that's dynamic in nature like a game, the blurry line between music and sound design, I think, gets even more blurry. I mean, really, if you're listening to a beautiful piece of music and you're wandering through a forest, part of the beauty of that, from a sound point of view, is the lovely birds. If you are listening to a delicate piece of music in the evening as you're walking around, looking at the moon over the water, again, part of that experience is perhaps the crickets that you're hearing off in the distance. And so in a lot of ways, the advantage of me doing all of the audio is that essentially my music becomes another sound for the sound design palette, and all of my sounds become more instruments for my musical orchestration. And I craft a complete sort of audio world, as it were, rather than just having to respond to something that somebody else has done.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, I actually had a real life experience of that very thing. We were up at Tanglewood, which is the summer home of the Boston Symphony, and the performance space is all open on the sides. And so the orchestra was playing Schumann's Second Symphony, but we could also hear the birds and the wind in the trees. And it just was such an incredible wash of sound. So yeah, to get that in a game is really incredible. One thing that I was wondering about is all of the sounds, the natural sounds. Did you record a lot of those, or were they samples?
So a bit of both. I spent many years creating sound effects libraries. That's part of one of the other things I do. I like all aspects of sound, and I'm fascinated by all aspects of sound. And I spent many years recording all sorts of things. And the sound effects libraries that we produce are actually used by EA, Activision, Skywalker Sound, Disney, you know, so people all over the world are using our sound libraries, but I very much use them myself. And I started building those sound libraries whilst living in Japan, because we lived in Japan for 3 years. And so not every single sound that's in Yondo is one that I record myself, but a large chunk of them are. And in fact, in some cases, part of one of the things that I've been doing with the distributors of our sound libraries is they have access to some very, very old BBC libraries from like the 1950s.
Oh, wow.
That were really amazing recordings of like literally in the Amazon jungle 60 years ago and things like that. And most of those recordings, these days, people just kind of relegated into sort of like, you know, research archives, because of course the recordings were not great quality. I spent about 12 months a while back going through all of those recordings and cleaning them up, and not just cleaning them up, but also actually editing them to be appropriate for game use. Because as I was saying before, we don't just have a stereo sound of birds. What I have in each tree is a series of individual bird, I guess you could call them bird words. And so there might be 20 bird words, and those get randomly selected and triggered over time and spatialized around the tree. So you literally get birds having a conversation backwards and forwards. And so all the birds and insects are actually generating in real time. They're all having real conversations. I mean, you know, they're not saying anything, but my point is that it is a dynamic sort of conversation. And so there are elements of the sound design in Yonder that are recordings that have basically not been used for half a century.
Wow, that's fascinating. We had those BBC sound library LPs at the very first radio station where I worked, and they were so specific because they had the sounds of horses trotting on pavement and then on turf. And it's just, I really admire all those people who went out in the field and recorded them. It was really a remarkable undertaking. And for you, too, to clean them up and make them usable again. That's so cool. One of the things I was really curious about is the singer for the main theme, Dusk Till Dawn. She has an absolutely beautiful voice. Who is that?
She does, doesn't she?
Yeah.
So that is an amazing young woman called Elizabeth Zaroff. And Elizabeth actually used to be based in Seattle and used to sing with the Seattle Opera. She is now based in Los Angeles, and I believe she's singing with the Los Angeles Opera. So she is a young, extraordinarily talented opera singer who I met at the Game SoundCon conference in LA a couple of years back, and I'd heard very, very good things about her. And I wanted to collaborate with somebody for that song. And so I asked her to send me just a very, very basic sort of like, have you got some examples of you singing? And so I listened to her voice and went, yeah, okay, that's just beautiful. And so I worked with her. I actually worked with, I'm going to mention George Sanger again, because George Sanger actually helped me out with some of the lyrics. Because Confession Time, Dusk Till Dawn is the first song I have ever written.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed. It's so polished.
I've never written a song. So George, I had a lot of the core lyrics, the core messages that I wanted in that. But there were sort of, you know, how do you get from sort of this core message sort of with the words? And I'm not a songwriter. And George is an amazing songwriter. So he helped me out. He helped me out with sort of keeping it on message and making the message flow very well. And then I engaged Elizabeth to record the singing part. There's actually sort of two singing parts. So there's sort of like a backing vocal, and she does that as well. And I am very proud of that piece of music, but it was absolutely a collaboration. And there is no way that piece of music would have been even half of what it was without Elizabeth's incredible voice and George's, you know, wonderful lyric writing abilities. So, yes, I think it is something that has really, really stood out amongst the music, and given even the tiniest chance to work with Elizabeth in the future, I will absolutely be taking the opportunity to do so.
Until dusk will I roam. It's the dark end of night, but the compass brings me light, encouraging. A shining hope within this storm, path of light, tell me where you are leading me to, my friends, sights wondrous and strange, so much of it is meant to. Do not fade, path of light, as we dare to meet this night. Each traveler, each star, I wonder who we really are. Day or night, I will care what truly always there. The light is us and ours, the shining hope within the stars. Dusk till dawn, by the starlight, there's a
Do you have plans to release a soundtrack?
Look, there's a soundtrack comes under DLC for the game, essentially. It's sort of like part of the, so the whole game thing. And so there's been no official announcements on any of that. I mean, obviously, when you release a game, you want to make as many of the aspects of the game available to your audience as possible. As the composer, I would certainly love to release the soundtrack. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes, you know, what sort of a reception you're getting. One of the interesting things about sound, and music does fall into this category as well, is that often when you do a really amazing job, nobody actually notices. It's when it's not good that people go, oh, and the sound's terrible. But when everything sort of sits in, because the job of sound and music, of audio in general, is to support the narrative. And so, you know, sometimes when it's working, it's sort of, it becomes a little bit invisible. So I have heard some, you know, there's been definitely been some comments from people saying that they've loved the music. So obviously that's something that is encouraging. And so I personally would love to release a soundtrack. And it's certainly something that we will be looking into. And I can guarantee you that if we do, I will let you know, because I'll be jumping up and down letting everybody know.
You know, it's amazing, because there are so many soundtracks that sound absolutely amazing away from the game. And I think this is one of them. So I'm sure you've got like a ready-made market for it if you do decide to do that. One of the things that I've really picked up on with the community of game composers is how supportive they are for each other. And I'd love to talk with you a little bit about your tutorials that you've put together for this implementation tool, Middleware FMod, because it looks like it's a kind of a complicated program, and yet you've got these tutorials to really help people out. So how did you become familiar with FMod, and then how did these tutorials kind of grow out of that?
Well, I might actually answer the second half of that first, in that so those FMod tutorials are actually something that I did quite some years ago. More recently, as in the last couple of months, I've just finished doing a series of videos for the Facebook spatial audio team that actually talks about, literally spatial audio for things like VR and AR and 360 video. I've also just finished writing a book that I was commissioned to write on audio for VR and AR and MR. And at the moment, as part of the Game Audio Network Guild, I administer essentially what is a kind of an online mentor training sort of series of videos and interviews that we do with them. So some of them are pre-recorded videos, some of them are live. Why do I do these? I think part of it comes from all of us in the industry get a lot of people contacting us saying, do you take interns, can we work for you for free, can you help me out, etc., etc. And of course we're also busy, we can't individually help everybody. And so by creating some educational material and some resources, it's a way of giving back collectively. So instead of sort of putting 2 hours into teaching one person, I can put 2 hours into creating a video and teach maybe 100. And so from that point of view, that's good. But the core reason behind this is the exact very first thing that you started out saying, the way that this industry works. The game audio community is, I believe sincerely, is the best community of people I've ever experienced in my life. I treat most of them more like family than I do friends. And because of that, I've got family all over the world. And this all stems from the very first time I actually visited America. And that was, I think it was 2012, wasn't that long ago. And this was actually for FMod. So I had a relationship with FMod that had come about because the company that I worked for was actually sharing office space with FMod, and they were also using FMod. And as the sound guy, obviously I got to know it. And then over the years, that relationship developed a little bit. And I always jokingly used to say to them, oh, your manual is terrible. It's very badly written. And then one day their marketing guy sort of said, fine, fix it then. And I was like, oh, okay, are you serious? And he's like, yes. I said, right, good, give it to me. And so that was just, he called my bluff. And so I called his bluff. And so from there, it went into creating some videos for them. And from that, I was actually asked to travel to Game Sound Con, which was back in those days, it was actually in San Francisco in 2012. And so this is my very first trip to America, and in a lot of ways I felt like the country boy heading to the big city, because Australia, just in case you don't know, Australia is actually just a little bit past Pluto around the back. That's how far away we are from everything. And so I'm going to San Francisco and I'm going to America the swearing thing you were talking about before, and I'm gonna break that rule once. I was scared shitless because I was going to be standing in front of people giving presentations. But more to the point, I was going to be in rooms full of people who were my superheroes, the people who had influenced me so massively. And I turn up to this thing and Brian Schmidt, bless him, introduces me as the world's leading expert on FMOD. And something that your listeners may not know is that Australians in general tend to be fairly self-deprecating. And so when somebody introduces me as the world's leading expert on something, I'm like, oh God, shut up. You can't say that. And they're like, well, it's true. And I'm like, oh, no pressure. So anyway, this was kind of like, you know, trial by fire. And I did know my stuff, but it was more the reception I had there. Everybody was just wonderful, like friendly and wonderful. And I got to meet people who were the people whose soundtracks I'd spent years listening to, whose games I had adored, whose music had inspired me. And on the last night, Brian took all of the speakers out to say thank you. And we're all sitting at this big table sort of having dinner. And from memory, I think on my right was Marty O'Donnell, who did Halo and Destiny. On my left was Mike Moraski, who did Portal 1, 2 and Half-Life. And sitting just sort of across from me is Alexander Brandon, who did Unreal and Deus Ex.
Wow.
And they are all now quite good friends, especially Alex. But they were just the nicest, most supportive, most generous, wonderful people. And the more I meet game audio people, the more I find they are all like that. And so when you are shown that level of support, of kindness, of respect, you kind of really don't have much choice but to go, well, if I'm ever going to have the opportunity to behave towards other people, I'm going to reflect exactly the way I was treated. And so that's part of that giving back. When you are given so much, you kind of can't help but give back.
Yeah, exactly. And I have found that too. I mean, this whole series got started because I sent Mike Salvatore an email telling him how much I loved the music for Destiny. And mm-hmm. could I talk with him about it? And he said, sure. And that got the ball rolling. He was so generous. And I have found that with every single person I've talked with. So it's I'm sort of basking in that glow of this really amazing community as well. Stefan, what have you got in the future that you could maybe tease or tell us about?
Okay, so right at the moment, there are two things I'm working on that I'm pretty sure I can tell you about. So interestingly, pretty much as I finished Yonder, so Yonder was wrapping up and I thought, great, I can concentrate on the book that I was just finishing off. And I literally had three VR projects fall in my lap almost simultaneously. So I've been working right at the moment on an absolutely adorable VR game that's called VR Regatta. And it is a sailing game of all things. Now,
oh,
I've
wow.
never sailed in my life. And yet you put on the Vive and you've got the two controllers and one of them you use for pulling the rope on the sail and the other one is for the tiller. And you can just zoom around in this little boat. And then if you want to, you can go up into a 40-foot racing yacht. And so I did all the sound for that. And what was really interesting about that is I've been doing a lot of research on creating spatial audio environments for VR and AR. And with this one, it was like, okay, so what's the challenge? The challenge is to recreate that sense of openness. You're out in the middle of the ocean. You're surrounded by wind. You're surrounded by water. You should feel like you're outside and alive. And so, you know, we worked on getting that aspect done. And then I thought, all right, what else can I do? And now what I've managed to do is you can actually tell which direction the wind is coming from simply by listening.
Wow.
And when the boat is actually sailing into the wind, you've got the wind actually blowing against you, obviously, because you're sailing into the wind. But if you flip around and you sail with the wind, the sound of the wind cuts right back because the wind's behind you. So that there is no there's no disturbance or turbulence from the wind, etc. So there's all of these dynamic ways in which the wind, which is the key critical aspect of a sailing game, and I've supported all of that with the audio, which has been a ton of fun. And so I'm now looking at doing some music for this, and that's a Steam game, and that's actually available. It's in kind of like, early access at the moment. So they're still working on the game, but it can be played, and we're just updating the sound now. And that's just been, it's just been delightful, because again, it was a nice sort of simple, and I guess you could almost say wholesome, experience.
Yeah.
The flip side of that is another VR thing I'm working on, which there's a company in Australia called Zero Latency, and they actually have branches all over the world now, where you put on a backpack and a VR headset and a pair of headphones, and you've got a plastic gun, and literally you run around a warehouse with a bunch of your friends, but what you're seeing is a completely virtual environment. And these are incredible. And so the one I've just been working on at the moment is, it's a fairly cliched sort of zombie thing, but when you sort of think zombies, it's a whole different experience when they're as big as you are and they're in your face.
Wow.
And so I've been having a ball creating the environments for that, because there's lots of different, you know, sort of from a concrete room that's all very echoey to a room that's full of padding that's very, very sort of dead and close I shouldn't give too much away, but let's just say it goes through some very extreme situations where the environment changes quite dramatically. And I was very pleased to hear that they got some beta testers in, and one of the comments from the beta testers was like, oh my God, that's one of the most immersive experiences I've ever had, and the audio does so much to really sell it. So, you know,
and then you were like, kind of nice to yes.
So it's funny. I'm going from lovely innocent yonder to basically shooting zombies with shotguns. And, you know.
Well, you know, those have been like the two ends of the spectrum for games for decades. So it's kind of nice to know that it's continuing.
True enough.
Stefan, it's been so much fun to talk with you. I really appreciate your time, and it's really good to know that we've got some things to look forward to. So thanks.
Thank you very, very much for your time. And I do promise that if a soundtrack for Yonder occurs, I will make sure that we let you know.